lovely Jo Treggiari on the podcast today, and she has a new book coming out in just a few days. So The Gray Sisters comes out on September 24th, 2019, and you guys are going to love it. Jo sent me an ARC of it, and it is pretty amazing. So we'll talk more about that later, and Jo will tell us all about it. But first, let's do our usual things. I'm going to tell you about my favorite book of the week. That right now, I've been getting caught up on my ARCs. I've been a little bit behind in reading them. I, like, overcommitted, I think. Not really realizing how crazy back to school and not, you know, realizing that we'd move so as soon as we did and all that. So, but I'm getting there to where I'm reading stuff that hasn't come out yet, which is exciting and what I love. So I just finished a book, The Memory Thief by Lauren Manzi. And sometimes when I read these ARCs, like, I don't go back and look through the blurb. Of course, when I request them and all of that, I look through the blurb and make sure it's something I want to read. But when I read it, when I actually get down to reading it, sometimes I'm just like, oh, okay, here's my next one. Let's go ahead and read it. So I don't always know what I'm getting myself into, right? But this one, that was kind of cool to not have all the stuff from the blurb in my mind, because it was really, like, fresh and different. And what I love about this story is it's a very different world from our own. It's fantasy, some magical type things going on in it. And, you know, I wasn't prepared for that necessarily when I started reading the book, but it wasn't like I felt, like, confused, which is always, that's not what you want, right? You don't want your reader to be confused when they start the story. So I loved that. I loved that I could just dive right into the book and feel like I was knew this world and I was a part of it, and I, like, fell easily into the characters and what was going on and all of the, you know, really tense situations. So I'll go ahead and read the blurb for you so that you know a little bit more about it. All right. The Memory Thief by Lauren Manzi. In the city of Craywick, memories reign. The power-obsessed ruler of the city, Madame, has cultivated a society in which memories are currency. Citizens are divided by ability, and gifted individuals can take memories from others through touch as they please. 17-year-old Etta Lark, is desperate to live outside of the corrupt culture, but she grapples with the guilt of an accident that has left her mother bedridden in the city's asylum. When Madame threatens to put her mother up for auction, a Craywick practice in which a criminal's memories are sold to the highest bidder before being killed, Etta will do whatever it takes to save her, even if it means rejoining the Shadows, the rebel group she swore off in the wake of the accident years earlier. To rescue her mother, Etta must prove her allegiance to the Shadows by stealing a memorized map of the maze, a formidable prison created by the bloodthirsty ruler of a neighboring realm. Etta faces startling attacks, unexpected romance, and above all, her own past as she uncovers a conspiracy that challenges everything she knew about herself and the world around her. In a place where nothing is what it seems, can Etta ever become more than a memory thief? And like I said, I think Manzi does a really good job of just creating this world that's super different from our own, but is really easy to jump into and feel like you understand the characters and what's going on and why they're doing what they're doing. I think she throws some really great twists and turns in there that make it really fun to read. And overall, it's just really well done. I read it, you know, like, it was one of those ones that I just wanted to keep reading and I wanted to finish it and see what happened. So I think you will really enjoy The Memory Thief, but it doesn't come out until October 1st. That's only a couple weeks away, so pre-order it now on Amazon so that when it comes out, it is at your door. Next is our Lit Chit Chat. I promised that it would come back this week, and now I'm a little bit more settled. Got my office set up, so we're good. And this Lit Chit Chat is inspired by a tweet from the lovely Liz Lawson. She tweeted, what day was it? On September 16th, if you really want to go see it and like it, because it got so many likes and retweets. But the tweet says, official petition for an upper YA category that's like 18 to 25, because college is a weird time and the years after college are even more so. I was a mess in my 20s and would have been so into lit that explored that time period in a non-stuffy way. People need this. And I bet if you're a part of the writing community on Twitter, you've seen this. You've seen the conversation about it, the retweets, and all of that. And I think it's something that a lot of us are wanting. I think, like, I was just, as I was reading that blurb for The Memory Thief, all these YA novels are all about 17-year-olds because that's, like, the upper limit of what you can write in YA, right? And I think sometimes these stories that we have, these ideas and the situations, don't always necessarily fit 17-year-old life. I guess in, like, a, you know, if you're doing more of, like, a contemporary, sometimes it doesn't fit. But I even think, like, I think back to my, both of my novels that are alive and well, the one that is sitting under my bed, which doesn't count with this statement, but both of my novels, This Dead World and When Jay Bird Went Missing, started off in that age group of like 22, 23, you know, years old, because that kind of fits the darkness and like the emotional trauma of the stories better. And so I had to sit there and I'm like, okay, but that's not really a category. People don't really, you know, agents can't sell that and publishers aren't buying that. So what do I do? Do I make them 30 years old? Which I'm still in my mid-20s, and not that I can't write about being 30. I have a husband who's years older than me and I could ask him. But, you know, do I make them 30 or do I make them 17 and make this really creepy, weird world fit a 17-year-old's life? Which I think you definitely can, but you have to make some adjustments, and I definitely had to change some of the intensity, I feel like, in a way. I think that, like, I've talked about Gretchen McNeil, who does amazing YA horror, and I think, you know, teenagers want that for sure. So it can be done. But I just think upper YA is so important because there are stories that we write that would fit better as upper YA, right? Those that I just feel like it's like 17 is YA and then like adult starts like 30. And I want something in the middle. I know we all want something in the middle. So let's just scream it from the rooftops. Write more upper YA. And maybe they just call it upper YA and not NA, which I feel like NA is like a dirty, dirty word. People don't want to hear that your story's NA, you know, new adult. So, yeah, it's just an interesting conversation to have. And I think it's interesting that, you know, something we as writers don't have a lot of control about kind of dictates where our stories can fit and what our stories should be as far as age categories. And you would think it'd be the other way around, right? Like, we would be dictating that, like, what we write would kind of change what's being published and what they're buying and all of that, but not so much. But yeah, I loved that Liz posted that, and I know a lot of other people loved it as well. She has a YA coming out in April from Delacorte Press. It is The Lucky Ones, and it's on Goodreads. You can pre-order it. It's also on NetGalley, so you can request it there, and she's awesome, so you should go ahead and follow her. And next year, around the time her book comes out, she will be on the podcast, so that's super exciting. But yeah, I just think that's an interesting conversation and something I've definitely thought about before. I think I sent a query once for This Dead World before because I did write it, like, all the way out, and they were in their mid-20s. That's how it started, and I feel like with what's going on and just some of the relationships, like, it fits so much better. So before I made it so that, you know, the main character, Sam, was 17, you know, I queried it a little bit, and I think I got some responses that were like, this isn't, you know, NA, like, I can't sell NA, it needs to be adult or it needs to be YA. That's just such a hard decision to make when you're writing these stories, you know? If your characters are 25 and they're telling you they're 25, how are you going to take almost 10 years away and make them 17? But yes, lit chit chat for today, upper YA and the fact that we need it really, really bad. Okay. So, Now we're going to get to Joe. And like I said, Joe has a new book coming out, The Gray Sisters, on September 24th. But what I love to do too, and this isn't Joe's debut. Joe had a really awesome book come out last year in 2018, Blood Will Out, which I really enjoyed. And Joe's had other books published too. So, you know, read her backlist, go read Blood Will Out. It's a really cool horror one, which I really enjoyed. And if you like anything that I post about and read, you will like it. So let's go ahead and get to know Joe and hear about the Gray Sisters. So let's go ahead and get started, Joe, and have you tell us about your upcoming book, The Gray Sisters.
It is a YA thriller. It's quite different from my previous book because it's less of a whodunit mystery, horror, you know, psych thriller kind of, but it's very suspenseful. So the basic synopsis is that there are actually four main characters in it, but two of the three main characters have been friends for a long time. They both lost siblings in a horrific plane crash, and about 2 years before the book starts. And so there's one survivor who's been in a coma the whole time, and she wakes up, and there's a picture printed, and in the photograph, one of the main characters, Dee, sees a stuffed toy that belonged to her sister, and it's sort of, she's been in therapy, but it sort of reawakens all of the grief and the everything she's been going through. So she decides she wants to visit the site of the plane crash for closure. And so her best friend Spider, who also lost a sibling, goes with her, and then their friend Min, who only started the school after the plane crash. So she's not as, you know, she's invested as far as these are her best friends, but right, not as far as having lost somebody. So they go, basically it's a road trip. And then at the same time, there's another point of view, another main character, a young teenager also called Ariel, who has grown up in a survivalist cult. And so we get her perspective as well, her point of view, and all the girls come together in a very suspenseful way, and then all the action unfolds from there.
That sounds...
So it's about friendship, it's about grief, it's about sisterhood. The title actually comes from the mountain range in the book, but I thought it played in really well. So it's a three-peaked mountain called the Gray Sisters, but I thought it played really well into the whole themes of sisterhood and the importance of, I'm always very interested in the importance of friendships between girls, you know, starting from childhood on up, and how strong those relationships can be.
That's awesome. It sounds amazing. I'm excited to get my copy of it and read it.
I know. I can't wait until you get it as well.
I know. That's awesome. So...
It comes out September 24th. I didn't mention that.
September 24th. Perfect. Everybody put that on your list. So let's talk a little bit about your journey to being published, because The Gray Sisters is not your first published book. How many do you have published?
I have four. So this is my fifth.
Nice.
My sort of trajectory is a good one, because it's been very up and down, and I think that anyone who hopes to be published, I think it's important that they realize that it's that a lot of us have these kind of stories of, you know, it really comes down to perseverance. Because it's hard. Now, it's not the easiest road to travel.
Definitely not.
Yeah. So my first book came out in 2006, and it was a middle grade. It was the first book I'd ever completed.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just really lucky, and I got a deal out of it with a small publisher, but they published it. I did not have an agent when I was published either.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't get an agent until afterwards.
Okay.
It ended up not being the greatest experience with that publisher. I'm not going to name them.
Yeah. I understand
around,
that.
But,
yeah.
So that was, I had a series deal with them. They only published the first of the series, but I wrote the other two books, and they were never published, the second and third in the series. And it really took the wind out of my sails and actually made me feel very insecure about writing and being published. And I sort of wallowed in pity for a while, especially I think with your first published book, every book is your baby, but your first one, now you have so much, I mean, so many hopes and dreams in that book, and to have it sort of cut short and never get to tell the whole story. There was so much time, that I'd invested in it. So my cousin, who's very, very cut and dried, said, write another book, write something new that they can't have, and that's your revenge, or you know, that's your that's your new start. So that's what I did, and that was Ashes, Ashes, and I ended up signing with Scholastic New York, and that book, the timing was excellent. It was a post-apocalyptic survival story, and it came out shortly after the Hunger Games.
Oh, awesome.
And it was just really good timing. Yeah. So that book did really well. And then it was just a one book deal with them. And then I wrote lots of books that I couldn't sell them. So I did a novella, some like little things here and there, but until Blood Will Out, which Penguin bought, I had quite a few years there where I was writing a lot, but just not getting published and not selling books. And that was another really hard lesson.
For sure. I think that's definitely an important thing for other people to hear, though. Even once you get a book deal, get something published, you know, like your experience.
Yeah.
You could go years without any of your stories making it out there.
Yeah, I mean, and I will spin a positive on this because it's, you know, not to sound too depressing or anything, and I don't regret anything.
No.
But, you know, I was so lucky with Blood Will Out and with mm-hmm. Great Sisters. Penguin just loved them, but you know, nothing is ever wasted, because all the books that end up in your drawer and never are published, each one of those books makes you a better writer. I mean, it's frustrating, and I've shelved books that I was totally in love with, but it's, you know, you're honing your craft all along, right? So the next thing you write will be even better, and then there's so much luck that comes into it, which is really the unfortunate thing about publishing. You know, I love writing. The publishing industry is a whole different thing, and I think that all of us as writers sort of have to be able to get our heads around both parts of it. You know, you know, how hard it is to actually write a book is, I mean, it's so hard, it's so much work, and it comes down to just you.
Yeah.
But that's the whole publishing thing is a whole other thing that you have to sort of get your head around. And it really, I mean, your ego really takes a beating.
For sure.
You know, in all different ways. Yeah.
And I think, too, it can be hard to go from that creative mindset you're in while you're drafting and revising, getting your book ready, to the business mindset mm-hmm. that you need to have when you're trying to get an agent and on sub and all the things that come after that. Because it is a business for the people who are part of your team going forward.
Absolutely, it is a business, and I think it's, you know, most writers tend to be highly creative people, very imaginative, you know, very fine with being hunched over their laptops for months on end, you know, living in their heads, all the beautiful parts of being an artist, but it is a business as well, and you have to, I think it's really important that you also educate yourself as to what you're getting into, you know. And what's great is it's all online. You can find the answers to all your questions, and there's an even stronger community, writing community now online, than there was when, certainly when my first book came out, but Ashes came out in 2011, and the difference between when that book came out and now is huge. I mean, the resources are bigger.
Definitely.
There's most of them. Yeah,
I think that's very true. I think the writing community is so supportive, so helpful, and then there's lots of, you know, writers turned editors, because that's in their background, and they share their experience as well and give you those resources. That's also part of why I started this podcast and am doing these interviews, so that people can hear from authors like you and hear from agents and, you know, just get a feel for a lot of different experiences and how the industry works.
Yeah, that's a great thing that you're offering to people.
I try, Joe. So let's talk a little bit about how you approached querying and how that went for you.
That's funny, on my notes it just says yikes.
That's probably pretty accurate for a lot of people.
Yeah, I have to say I hate doing it, and I hate having to write a synopsis of my books as well.
Yes.
So even after you have an agent who's doing all that stuff for you, they still ask you to do a synopsis of your books.
Yeah.
So you don't ever escape that.
No.
Yeah, and I think I've gotten better at querying than I was when I started. And what I did was I just educated myself, and I just read a lot. I mean, at the time there wasn't as much online, so I bought all those books, you know, the marketplace, writer's marketplace.
Yeah.
Books and stuff. And yeah, so that's how, you know, I would actually use those books to research agents and research everything, how to query everything. Now you can get all that stuff online, which is even better. But I don't, you know, when I started as well, there's this beautiful, like, sort of blissful ignorance when you're first starting out that I really miss now. Because, you know, I think all of us, when we first, like, the first book we ever write, we have so much confidence in that book.
Oh, for sure. You're like, this is the best thing that's ever been written.
Absolutely. And you have no doubt that you will find an agent, that it will be published, you know, just like absolutely no doubt at all. The doubts creep in later. Yeah. I had to query between Ashes and Blood Will Out. I had to find, so I got an agent, with the Ashes book, and I got an agent really fast, and it sold really fast. Like, everything was all my ducks were in a row. It was a beautiful thing. It was serendipity. It was the zeitgeist. It tapped into all that. So it happened. You know, you have, at the time I didn't think, oh, this is super unusual, but now looking back, I'm like, oh, that was really lucky. I mean, that was super unusual. It usually doesn't line up like that.
No.
So well. So my first agent left the business after Ashes came out, and it devastated me. So then I had to find another agent, which I did eventually, but the whole time, so I had about 3 manuscripts, I think, that I'd written. So I queried on all of them, and
you had to go back to the query trenches after your agent left the business. You didn't, like, stay within that agency?
No, he was a one man.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we're still really good friends. I mean, he's an amazing person, and I love him, but yeah, he just decided to turn his attention elsewhere. And I thought that I'd be snapped up, but it's not about, I mean, of course it's about some writers. John Green, I'm sure, doesn't have to query.
No, I don't think he has to do that anymore.
Yeah. But, you know, Ashes did really well, but it wasn't about that book, because that had already been published. It was about whatever I had next. So in a weird way, you just go back in the trenches again. And in a weirder way, I think in some cases, it's not always in your favor to be an already published author or a mid-career author. Yeah. You know, it's almost better to be like a debut author.
Yeah.
You know, with a great query. It's and I'm not exactly sure what the reason for that is, but it was tough. And I ended up with a fantastic agent in New York. But I queried her on three different manuscripts, and she was like, I love your voice, I love the style, but you know, this isn't the one. And then I'd send her another one of my manuscripts, and it took like till the third one. And then I was with her for a few years, and we just couldn't get a deal going, and I felt like we weren't really really going in the same direction, so we parted amicably, and then I got another agent. So I'm actually on my third. I know it makes me sound like I'm just a nightmare, but it doesn't. you need an agent who. She loved my stuff, but I think that the deals she was making were like other kinds of deals. I don't write a lot of romance into my books, and so that was, she was definitely like very strong in romance. Yeah, and I don't really do that.
I think it's like I mentioned earlier, it's good that for aspiring authors, people who don't have an agent yet, to realize and keep in mind, like we've talked about, how, you know, it is a business and it's your dream, and you know, it's your book baby, but you gotta keep in mind that you want an agent who's gonna be like your partner, who has the same goals for you and is really gonna keep you and your book's best interest in mind. And that might take you a couple people to get to, unfortunately, but I think that's a very interesting journey. And I think I love asking this question because everybody's journey is very different, so it's always good to hear that.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, for all the unagented writers out there who are looking for agents, you don't have to take the first one, you know. Yeah. It's really, you know, definitely, because you get so, I mean, it's such a beautiful thing when an agent, you know, asks for a full manuscript.
Yes, and then, it is.
And offers you representation, but you need to make sure that your goals line up and that your expectations line up and all those things, because otherwise, you know, someone's going to be disappointed. You have to trust them completely. And I'm not saying I did not trust my agents. I totally did. But, you know, when the fit's like not perfect, yeah. I think there's nothing wrong with saying, I love you, but, you know,
definitely, but we're not right together.
Exactly. Yeah. So I know one of your questions was any tips on querying. So mm-hmm. the only other thing I wanted to say about that was, what helped me a lot actually the last time I had to query was I have some writer friends who are successful, and who, you know, we've sort of fostered a relationship, mostly online actually, through Twitter and stuff, and they're willing to read my query letter, and some of them are just really masters of formatting and writing them. And so I just reached out to writer friends and I asked them to help me, they did.
Yeah, I think that's super important, and something that's so wonderful about our writing community is that you can get fresh eyes on it, and somebody who hasn't read your book a billion times and knows all of the inside details, who can really just give you a outside view of what's going on in your query. Very helpful.
Yeah, because they have to be super punchy, right? They really got to grab the agent's attention right off the bat. And, they're not easy to write. They're really hard to write, for sure.
They are. I really have always struggled with queries. So let's talk about writing a little bit. What is the hardest part of writing for you, and what's the hardest part of being an author?
Okay. So this was hard for me to come up with an answer, because I'm working on a manuscript right now, and it's like pulling teeth. Mm-hmm. I'm having such a hard time with it. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's, I think I'm just exhausted.
That could be it.
Yeah, I wrote The Grey Sisters in 4 months.
Oh, and my that's goodness. Never
happened. Yeah, it's never happened to me before. That book, you know, Stephen King has this thing. Have you read his On Writing? Because it's really great.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, so where he talks about how every book for him is like, it's like, it already exists in its entirety, and the writer's job is to sort of like ship away and like uncover it, right? Uncover
yes.
the story. So that is, you know, I thought, wasn't that lovely for Stephen King, but that's never been my experience at all. But this book, it sort of was like that. Like, the voices were so clear and the characters just spoke to me. So it was this like amazing thing. And of course, after that, it was still really exhausting because I edit, like, I do a huge number of edits, and I also edit with my agent and with my editors and all the rest of it. So it was still a lengthy process, but the actual writing of it, of like a pretty good first draft, was 4 months. So I thought, hey, this is how it's going to be now.
Right.
This is the way it's going to be. Nope. That is not the way it's going to be. That was, you know, every book is different. Writing every book is different. So right now, I would say I'm a single mom and I have two kids and they are off school.
Yes, it is summer.
Yeah. So I always think that, I will write a lot in the summer, but I need to rethink that and realize I really can't get much writing done in the summer. And that's part of the reason that I'm struggling with this book, I think, because I really see it pretty clearly, but I just can't do my, you know, my routine, my schedule. Normally I do like 1,000 words a day minimum. And, you know, that's what I do. Every day I write, but I just can't do it.
It's hard when kids are at home, for sure.
Yeah, and they're older. They're 12 and 17, but they still. And I also think it's actually having other people in the house. Like, I'm used to having, on the days I don't work, I'm used to having the house silent, you know, and empty. And so that's changed as well.
Yeah, I think if you know your... I think everybody has an environment that they'd prefer and that their brain kind of works best for writing. So if yours is silence, definitely having teenagers in the house is probably not going to help you.
Yeah. So it's time. That's the hardest part of writing for me at the moment.
Yes.
It's just finding the time. And the hardest part of being an author, I'd say it's kind of like, because I think like a lot of writers, I'm introverted, but then I also love meeting readers. you have to, there's so much, you know, there's so much promotion that you can do as a writer, and that I sort of feel like you should do as a writer, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't come so naturally to me. Like, I would much rather be writing. So... And I don't go on like big tours or anything like that. I don't know, you know, I do like little things here and there, but just that, like a weekend, you know, in another city, staying in a hotel where you've got like back-to-back events and activities and where you're on all the time, I find that really exhausting. So.
Oh, definitely. You need time to recharge your batteries in an environment that's comfortable. I'm definitely, I would say, I'm totally more introverted. I can be extroverted and be out with people, but afterwards I'm like drained and I need to go lay in my bed and be alone for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's really sad. For Blood Will Out, I went to Chicago last year and I actually, I got in to the hotel and I actually went and took a nap. Like, I don't think I've ever done that before in my life, but yeah, I had to go and take a nap, so that's what I did. But I love it. I mean, I love meeting other writers. You know, writing is such an isolating activity, and other writers are the only ones who understand. You know, and you can't really vent or express like disappointment or like the ups and downs or, you know, some of the harsh realities of being a writer and trying to live a creative writing life. To other people, because other people think that it is, you know, oh, how great is that? You just get to, like, lounge around and write books, or, you know, oh, how great is that? That, you know, people want to read your books. They don't, you know, you feel like you can't complain because it comes off as...
So glamorous, but it's really not.
Yeah. think it's so glamorous. Yeah. And then if you complain, then it's like, you know, what kind of person are you? You're this little complaining person. so other writers get it, right?
They do, I mean, for sure.
Yeah, and they understand the anxiety and that sort of arrogant insecurity, you know, arrogance that you think that your book will be published, and insecurity that everyone will hate it, you know. Or, you know, all those, that weird mix we all have.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think mental health and self-care, especially in for all people, but I think when you're putting something out there that's so close to your heart, that you've poured probably a lot of yourself into in different aspects, and all of that is crucial. So I think, yeah. You know, if you say no to tours or interviews or whatnot, if it makes you better as a human being and you can still do what you love, which is right, I think, then that's important. And if people judge you for it, that's their problem.
Yeah, no, I think we definitely have to look after ourselves, and the anxieties that a lot of writers feel, you know, no one ever used to talk about it, you know, and it is being talked about now, and that's one of the great things about Twitter, right, is that people yes. can really say what they feel, and they can also feel community, and other people will reach out to them and say, I feel exactly the same way, and you're not alone, and, you know, so that's all, that's lovely, that part. I mean, I look forward to doing events, and I get all excited, and
yeah,
for sure. But it's, you know, I have to put on my other hat.
Yes, your extroverted hat, and then when it gets tired, you put it away.
Then I go take a nap in the hotel room.
I love it. Hotel beds are the best to nap on.
I know, they're so nice. And I have dogs as well, so going to hotels actually sort of a relaxing thing for me.
I bet.
Apart from, you know, all the events.
Yeah. So let's talk about the flip side of that question, though. What is the best part of being a writer and being an author for you?
Well, I love writing, and I think I've just been doing it, writing little stories for so long that I don't feel complete unless I'm writing something.
Yeah,
I just love it. I love every part of it. I love thinking up a story. I love figuring out how to put it together, how, you know, what's going to work. I love revising.
You love revising?
I love revising. Yeah.
Tell me why.
Well, that's where I get to fix all the things that are wrong with it. I mean, first drafts are the hardest for me because I don't want to skip over to your pantser.
Go ahead. Planner. Let's do it. Let's skip.
Yeah. Okay. So I have like, I'm in between of a pantser and a planner.
Yeah.
I have like a general idea of like what I want to say in a book. And I have like little signposts, like they're almost like stepping stones in like a river.
Yeah.
But they can be spread pretty far apart. So I have to make like a pretty big jump, and sometimes I fall in. So I like to be able to work towards like something as I write. But a lot of times I don't know what's going to be in the middle, and I might have a vague idea of what's going to be at the how it's going to end.
Yeah.
But I don't like having like a definite idea about the ending, because sometimes writers get married to an ending when they're first thinking of the story, and by the time they've written it, that ending isn't as strong as it could be. You know, right. It might be kind of weak, or it might not work at all. And so I like to, I usually start with like a scene in my mind or a character who's like really strong in my mind. I'm very visual when I write, so I see them. Okay. And I do this thing too. There, like, I ask myself, "What if?" I call it the "What ifs." Isn't that's pretty catchy?
I love it.
So it's, you know, what if this happened, or what if she responded like this, or what if? They're just what ifs, and that's how I kind of craft my chapters, I guess, or my scenes.
I love it. I think that's a really good method to use. Something else I love to do, and I heard about this at a writing conference I went to, but, you know, like, how I think it's like, what if this was worse? I think is kind of like the idea of it. So like, what could make this worse? So you have your scene or your idea, and then you're like, okay, but now what if I add this in and it makes it even worse? Like, how much better would that be? And it's like just being really mean to your characters, basically.
I do that too. I think what is the most horrible thing I can do to this character?
Exactly.
Blood Will Out, the first scene that came to me was this girl at the bottom of the well, you know, not knowing how she got there. And then my what if was, what if it was a serial killer who put her there? that was the worst thing I could think of.
It's a pretty bad thing to have happen to you, so.
it was the worst thing I could think of. Yeah, and I really fall in love with my characters, you know, as flawed as or even as ill as they may be, you know, so it hurts me to put them in those situations, but I do it anyway.
Well, that's what we're here for. We have to make them hurt a little bit for them to change and eventually be different at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. There has to be some kind of transformation.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love writing. I love that part of it. Really, it's all the other part of it that I struggle with. But writing is, I mean, what a joy and, you know, what an amazing thing to do that requires, really, I mean, I write on a laptop, but, you know, if I had to, I could do it on a piece of paper with a pencil, you know. It's pretty amazing how we're able to concoct these things out of our imaginations.
It's crazy and how we're all able to concoct very different things. Like, I think if you sat four writers down and gave them the same general idea or writing prompt, you know, you would get four completely different stories. They might have some similar elements, but, you know, our brains all work different ways, and that's why we are able to have so many different authors, so many different stories, and that's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Especially since they say there's no new stories, right?
Right.
So it's your voice that's new and different, though, and that's something that, you know, aspiring writers, unpublished writers, all writers should remember that your voice is what makes it unique. So.
For sure.
Just bring as much of yourself as you can to your writing.
Yes. So yeah. On the topic of your, you know, writing is the best part and your love of writing, when did that love of writing begin?
It must have started shortly after my love of reading began.
Probably.
Yeah. I wrote stories. I have a younger sister and I wrote stories for her. From a pretty early age, probably, you know, somewhere between 6 and 8, I started writing stories. Mostly I did fairy tale retellings.
I love
it. If I only known how big those were going to be.
Yeah, you could have saved all those.
I would have stuck with it, yeah. Yeah, and I was a voracious reader. My dad is a librarian and my mom is a university professor. My father's also an high school English teacher. So we just had books in the house. And I'm the same way with my own kids, that they can read anything in the house. If they're ready to read it, they can read it. There's no restrictions. So I read quite a few things that I probably shouldn't have read when I was young. But with no damage that I can tell.
Right.
I remember when I first started reading, I remember when I could first read the street signs when we were driving past them in the cars, you know, and then I just read everything. I mean, I couldn't not be reading. So if I was at the breakfast table, I would be reading the cereal box because I just wanted to read all the time. This was later, but I was pretty upset by the fact that all of my adventure stories were like boy centric. So when I started writing stories for my sister, I always made the girl the heroine. Always.
I love that.
The hero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I always loved girls who were like sort of defied stereotypes and convention and, so that's, you know, that sort of informed how I was going to write as an adult as well, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think that was just preparing you for the world we're in now and what we needed.
So, yeah. And then it was actually after, I thought I was going to be a creative writing major, and I studied literature and creative writing in university, but I got sidetracked and ended up working in the music industry for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So I worked for record labels, and I eventually had my own record label for 10 years. And then I had my son, my first son, my eldest, and I have never felt so creative in my life. I was sleep deprived and all the rest of it. But I had also joined a writing group that was led by this amazing memoir writer in New York, and she wanted to have a bunch of new moms come to this writing group and write. So I joined her group, and we all brought our babies with us because they were young enough to bring, you know?
Yeah.
And we wrote, and that just like reawakened my love of writing. And my first book that was published, I wrote when I was in that group.
That's awesome.
So I had all this encouragement, and it was beautiful. And that sort of got me back on it again and got me out of the music industry.
That's awesome. I mean, the music industry, I'm sure, was fun, but we're glad you're over here with us writers. So you told me you love revising. So, which I think a lot of people will not agree with you on, but tell us a little bit about your revision process. What do you look for right away, and your thought process through all of that?
So you know what, I listened to the podcast you did where you answered your questions.
Oh yes,
it was very informative and really wonderful.
Thank you.
So I don't revise as structured way as you do. For sure.
That's okay.
I have no trouble cutting things at all. So basically I work through it, and I do revise quite a lot when I'm writing, but I try not to, because I'd rather just get to the end and then start over again.
Yeah.
Although this book I'm working on now, I keep going back to the beginning. So I may begin it in a different way, and then that'll fix that. Anyway, so I go through it, and I basically cut. A lot of times I'll read it aloud, and that really helps me, like, cut things that are just extraneous or don't work. And then it's more like a question of, like, shaping it, like, moving stuff around. I'm pretty brutal with it in the first few revisions, and then it gets down to, like, fine-tuning, and the whole time I'm asking questions, I'm asking about my character's motivations in particular, because that directs everything, right? That,
for sure.
That directs what they do and how they talk and what's propelling them forward and how they're going to change by the end of it. And then my agent is an editing agent, so she's pretty fantastic. So she'll after I've revised to probably 10 times on my own, I get my sister to read it. She's the only person who ever reads my work before it's ready.
Nice.
And she's mostly a cheerleader, which is great.
That always makes you feel real good right before you send it off to somebody else.
Absolutely. And then my agent's also my cheerleader, but she's also really tough. So once I get the revisions from her, then we sort of formally send it to my editor at Penguin. I mean, I already have a deal with them, but it's just nice to sort of be formal, like to have my agent send it, you know, she puts like the agent logo on it and it's all formatted really nicely and stuff. So, and then my, I have a team of editors I work with at Penguin, and they're all amazing, and we just whip that puppy into shape. That's what we do.
I love it. It's good to have a team. I think, you know, even for writers who don't have an agent or, you know, editors at their, you know, publisher, I think that's where the writing community can come into play. I think if you find trusted people who are going to be honest with you and give you like a compliment sandwich of things you need, so you're not just feeling really downtrodden, that is super helpful.
Yeah, my writing teacher, the one who led the writing group, she was so good at giving critiques, and she always started in a positive way.
Yeah.
And sort of like overview of like beautiful things, and then she would kind of break it down like in the, you know, the little problem areas or whatever. So I really learned from her. But yeah, before I was with Penguin, before I had editors that I was working with, I had between 3 and 5 critique partners. And they're all writers, and some of them, you know, more published than others, some of them not published, but people that I totally trust to give it to me straight, and it just helps so much. I mean, I still remember the first critique I got. It was on that first book. It felt like a knife in my heart.
I bet.
I remember, was so upset. But after that, I realized, pretty soon after that, I realized that to get a critique from someone who's not, you know, mean or has some kind of agenda that you don't know about, that's why it takes a while to really find the people that you trust, because there's some people who might, you know, give you a skewed criticism based on whatever's going on in their life, you know, but just like, you know, solid people, their criticism of your work is a gift.
For sure. I think too, you finish.
Oh no, it's just such a gift. I just repeated myself twice.
Oh, no, that's right. You got to emphasize it. It is really a gift. I was thinking about something. I love to have other writers read my work too, I think, because they understand the process and what goes into it. But I think having somebody at times who isn't a writer, maybe not your mom or your husband, but like your sister, who can be a cheerleader, but who can also just be like, oh, this didn't really make sense, or like, you lost me here, just to give you story feedback too, is really helpful. My brother is really good at that. He, you know, just will read it for what it is and tell me, you know, his general thoughts, which can be helpful too when you're kind of getting lost in the specifics of it sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And my sister is really good at pointing out stuff that needs to be clarified.
I think that is, I just love, I think you're maybe the first, maybe not the first, but well, like it's surprised me how much you love revision. So I just wanted to know. I wanted to see how you do it and what makes it so wonderful.
Yeah, I'm trying not to curse, but basically my first draft method is, I used to do a lot of writing workshops for kids, and I would call it spewing, which is colorful.
Yes.
So I just try to get it out of me and onto the page quickly as possible. And I know it's going to just be this, you know, ugly mess. You know, and then revision, it just gives me the chance to like step back and like look at what I've got and like and just see where I can fix it, you know, and really get a sense of the whole, you know, if it works as like a whole story.
For sure.
Like, I have to write it before I can step back and look at that, so.
Oh, well, yeah, you can't write, or what is it, that thing you always say, like, you can't edit a blank page or whatever.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
Very true. Well,
yeah. I mean, you know, I think we would probably revise until forever.
Oh, for sure.
A chance, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but every book is, a learning. I mean, that's what I love most about writing. One of the things I love the most about writing is it really, it's hard. It's hard as hell. But the more you do it, the better you get. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, I think that, you know, I think having an imagination and being sort of a creative person and having ideas, I think these are wonderful things. And there are some writers in the world who are just geniuses and everything they write is amazing. But the majority of us, it's having, you know, having like a little bit of talent to put words together, and just the perseverance and the, you know, being willing to put in like the hard work.
For sure, not giving up.
Yeah, that's what makes you, you know, that's what will get you where you want to go.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
Can be a hard pill to swallow sometimes too, especially like we were saying how you write that, you know, book and you're like, this is amazing. And then critiques start to come in and you're like, wait, no, it was so good. What happened? And you have to keep going and keep fighting it. But like, I think your story is a great one. You had something published, then it took you, you know, years and years until something else came along and you had to go through a couple agents, but you kept going, you persevered and kept writing, which is the important thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel, you know, I get depressed if I don't write, so.
For sure.
Yeah, it just becomes part of who you are and part of your, what makes your day special, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it should make you happy as well. If it's making you miserable all the time, then.
That's not good.
No.
So, Joe, my last question for you is my favorite one. It is about what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time, just a book you've read recently.
I hated this question because I don't know if you know, but I'm a co-owner of a bookstore and in my little town, and I love YA and I read YA, and it's my baby at the store is YA in middle grade. So I love it. And of course, being a bookseller, I get ARCs all the time.
Yeah.
So, my piles, my TBR piles are massive.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. So to come to just say one book, can just, I say three?
Sure, say three. Yeah, we're good.
Four? Okay. So one of them is A.S. King's Dig. I love her. Even her books that I don't love as much, I still appreciate the hell out of them. She's an amazing writer, an amazing mind. So that's A.S. King. I don't know if you heard me, but her book Dig, which is about like intergenerational racism and and families, it's amazing.
Awesome.
And then I also just read, I'm late on this, but Maureen Johnson's Truly Devious, which is sort of like murder mystery, crazy country house boarding school setting.
Love it.
And Karen McManus.
Yes.
I hate her. She's so good. She's so good. How could she be that good? Anyway, amazing. So one of us is lying.
That's one of my faves too.
It's so good. I really hate her. And I just read another, this is really, this is awesome because I live in Nova Scotia by way of New York and Northern California. So a pretty recent transplant. But I met another writer here and he just wrote a serial killer book that came out a few months ago called Keep This to Yourself. And his name is Tom Ryan.
No, I love it. I was talking to Tom today. I love that book. Okay. Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, it was so good, right?
So good.
Yeah. Hoping to do some events together just around the province because, you know, Nova Scotia, serial killers. I mean, to have two writers both write books with serial killers and
that's awesome.
Within a year of each other is pretty amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, I loved that book. It gave me all the sort of Scooby-Doo, like Stranger Things feels, you know, just like a bunch of kids, like trying to figure out what's going on. Small town, spooky, eerie. I thought it was great.
Oh my gosh. I love small town, spooky, eerie, everything. Give me books with only that. I love it.
I'm glad. Yeah, I do too.
Well, absolutely. Awesome. I don't think anyone's ever given me four books before, but I love it so much.
I'm sorry. I could give you, I'm actually sitting here in my office where I write, and I have floor-to-ceiling bookshelves in here with just my YA and my middle grade titles, and I'm just looking at all these books that I love, and so I could come up with a lot more, but
I'm sure. I love it. I love those ones. Definitely some good ones. I haven't read Dig or Truly Devious, so you gave me a couple to add to my list.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Awesome.
I mean, Dig's not super fun, but Dig makes you think and
yes,
and cry. Yeah.
Which we all need sometimes.
Absolutely, we do.
So, Joe, thank you so much for chatting with me today for the podcast. It has been a pleasure to learn more about you and your writing style and your book, The Gray Sisters.
Thank you, Rose. It was such a pleasure speaking with you, and I really appreciate you reaching out to me.
All right, guys. Wasn't Joe amazing? Really awesome just to hear from every author who's on the podcast. I feel so blessed to have everybody be a guest who is a guest. It's just the best thing in the world, I think, for us all to connect. And I've had a lot of really wonderful authors and listeners post about the podcast recently, which is like literally makes my whole entire day, just so you know. Like, it makes me smile, it makes me happy, it makes me feel like what I'm doing here, sitting alone in the dark most of the time, or on the floor when my husband like wrangles the children, is worth it. You know, I just think that opening up these conversations, hearing from other authors and their stories and agents and all that is so helpful for all of us, no matter where you are in your writing journey. So please rate and review if you can. If, you know, you listen on Spotify or something where you can't, please share it. Post about it on Twitter, tag me, let's be friends, post about it on Instagram. It's wonderful to see the conversation just spreading out to lots of different people. And again, I'm still filling out my 2020 schedule. 2019 is fully booked. So if you want to be on the podcast in 2020, have a book coming out, are an agent and want to share your lovely, lovely wisdom, please reach out to me. Let's get connected and get something on the schedule. And you guys follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Talk to me. Tell me your favorite books. Let's be friends. It's at Rose Quinney, Quinny. And that's on both Instagram and Twitter. And I'm just feeling very grateful for all of you, everybody who listens to this. I love you guys a lot. So I'll see you. Sort of, you know, like you'll hear my voice and see a picture of me next week. Have a great week, guys.